Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court. Kareem Kenfield for the appellant, Gordon Reed. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. Mr. Reed alleges that while he was incarcerated in a federal prison, a prison guard repeatedly slammed his head against an iron railing. And after he reported the assault, that guard and several others retaliated on two separate occasions by placing Mr. Reed in hard restraints for 48 hours with no opportunity to eat, sleep, or use the toilet. Now, I'll begin with the legal issue that this court ordered further briefing on. May Mr. Reed seek damages under Bivens to redress his injuries, in particular for his First and Eighth Amendment claims? And the answer is yes. For decades, prisoners across the country have been able to bring conventional Bivens actions like Mr. Reed's, challenging physical abuse by prison guards. Defendants argue that this court's longstanding recognition of those claims must be set aside under the Supreme Court's Ziegler v. Abbasi decision, but that is incorrect. I'd like to focus on the special factors analysis because that applies to both Mr. Reed's First and Eighth Amendment claims. The central inquiry under that analysis is whether there are sound reasons to think Congress would not want Bivens to exist. And in these circumstances, there are sound reasons to believe Congress would want Bivens relief. Now, the first reason is that Congress itself has preserved and approved prisoner Bivens claims like Mr. Reed's. In the 1996 Prison Litigation Reform Act, Congress addressed what it saw as the central problem with prisoner suits, that there were too many unmeritorious filings. It addressed that problem by imposing a number of significant procedural and substantive limitations and requirements for suit, such as the three strikes rule, PLRA pre-screening, and the payment of filing fees. The Congress was also very clear that it did not wish to prevent legitimate prisoner claims from going forward. So in other words, Congress struck a careful balance. It calibrated the availability of Bivens relief in order to weed out the bad claims but allow the good ones to proceed. And defendants now ask this court to second guess that judgment by eliminating Bivens claims entirely, but that is exactly what Abbasi instructs courts not to do. Defendants also argue PLRA in fact indicates Congress's intent to eliminate Bivens, but that just doesn't make sense. The whole point of the PLRA is to establish when prisoners can Bivens lawsuits. As the Third Circuit put it in its Distrin v. Levy decision rejecting the same argument, quote, the very statute that regulates how Bivens actions are brought cannot rightly be seen as dictating that a Bivens cause of action should not exist at all. Now, Your Honor, another reason that Congress would intend Bivens to be available here is that Mr. Reed is bringing a prototypical Bivens suit against low-ranking guards, and that means his suit is nothing like the suit in Abbasi. In that case, the Supreme Court rejected damages liability against top-ranking executive officials like the Attorney General and FBI Director in their official response to a terrorist attack. It said that those allowing damages in those circumstances would implicate both national security and considerations of policy. But Abbasi specifically distinguished challenges to, quote, standard law enforcement operations. And of course, that is exactly the type of challenge Mr. Reed has brought here. And the Third Circuit recognized that distinction in its Bistrian v. Levy decision, where it reaffirmed that Bivens was available for a prisoner deliberate indifference claim like Mr. Reed's after Abbasi.
Now, counsel, may I interrupt? Because we've read your briefs carefully, and I'm hearing you stress your strengths, but I'd like to ask you to turn to some of your weaknesses because that's more meaningful to me. So if we can, I know lawyers don't like it when I do this, but if we could poke at those. It seems to me a problem that you've got on special, because the other thing Abbasi talks about is pretty clearly there's a concern about separation of powers and it's not our job to run prisons, right? So we have that. And I grant you that there aren't high level, certainly not cabinet level folks involved in this case like there were in Abbasi. But the other thing is that there's other forms of relief here available, aren't there? This isn't a situation where this person would be turned away. Can you speak to that, please? Are there other remedies that are adequate here?
Absolutely, Your Honor. There are no remedies available here that would indicate that Congress would not want Bivens to be available, which is what the Third Circuit in its Bistrian case concluded when presented with the same remedies that defendants argue here. Now, the only alternative remedy that Abbasi itself discusses is an equitable remedy like injunctive relief. But Abbasi, again, specifically distinguished specific instances of law enforcement overreach, because in those cases, equitable remedies can not redress the injury. Only damages can redress the injury. And defendants have not disputed that that is the type of claim Mr. Reed has brought. Now, defendants primarily emphasize two other remedies. First, the Federal Tort Claims Act. But the Supreme Court has already held in Carlson that FTCA claims do not displace Bivens because Congress's intent was, quote, crystal clear that both FTCA claims and Bivens should be available in these circumstances, that they are complementary remedies because only Bivens provides the critical deterrent effect of personal liability and damages. And the Supreme Court has never questioned Carlson's holding. In fact, in Abbasi itself, the plaintiffs acknowledged that they had FTCA claims available, but the court did not cite that as an alternative to Bivens. Moreover, Congress itself reaffirmed its intent in the 1988 Westfall Act, where it considered the specific question of when federal officers should be liable in damages for actions taken within the scope of their employment. And it generally provided absolute immunity to officers from suit from state tort claims, but it included an explicit exception that preserved Bivens liability. And I think that's critical because the central question posed by Abbasi is, would Congress intend for the FTCA to replace Bivens? And here, Congress has considered that specific question and given us its answer. Now, the other
excuse me, I don't hear you talking about the Fourth Amendment. I think that's the very first assault where the prisoner's head was allegedly, or whether he was beaten against the metal railing. And so I'm reading in here that you're in agreement. Is that right? That assault should be actionable, if at all, under the Eighth Amendment. Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor. Mr. Reed has pleaded that.
Okay, I'll take yes for an answer. Now, can we talk about the First Amendment claim, please? I think our court has recently declined to extend Bivens to a post-Abbasi to a First Amendment claim. Do you want to speak to that?
Yes, Your Honor. So this court has addressed the issue in its Vega decision, but Vega is distinguishable in two critical respects. The first is, as the court itself stated, it was not a damages or nothing case, because in that case, the injury that the petitioner was alleging was that the prisoner had been transferred to a different prison facility. And in fact, he was able to redress that injury through the prison grievance process in securing his transfer back to the original facility. So the court said, this is not a case where damages are necessary because he has already solved his own problem through the grievance process. But that is not the case here, where there were three specific instances of physical abuse that are long over, and there is nothing that the grievance process can do to remediate that because it does not authorize damages, which is why.
Forgive me for interrupting. What if all three of those instances are redressable under the Eighth Amendment? Does that mean we ought not extend Bivens to the First Amendment?
No, Your Honor. To the extent that Congress would intend for Bivens to be available for an Eighth Amendment claim, there's no reason it would not also intend Bivens to be available for a First Amendment claim. After
That's the point right there. That's what, I mean, Abbasi says very clearly that we should be awfully careful. In fact, it says, it uses the word disfavored, right? When we approach the notion of extending Bivens beyond where it's already been recognized. So could you focus right on that? That seems to me a very critical point.
Yes, Your Honor. The Supreme Court has instructed that caution must be exercised in this area, but it has also emphasized that damages can still be necessary to address the persisting concern of inadequate deterrence, which is exactly the type of concern at issue here for perhaps the most serious type of First Amendment violations, where prison guards abuse their position in retaliation for protected First Amendment activity by physically abusing an inmate. I'd also note, Your Honor, in response to your earlier question about intrusion on prison operations, I would point the court to the Supreme Court's Crawford L. decision, which is cited in the government's brief and our brief, because in that case, it addressed a very similar concern. The defendants there were arguing that there should be a special standard that applies to First Amendment retaliation claims because they are more easily alleged. And the court said that is exactly the concern that Congress has already addressed in the PLRA. The whole point of the PLRA was that Congress was considering whether prisoners were filing bogus lawsuits. And it responded to that concern with a comprehensive legislative solution that imposed numerous disincentives and deterrents, but also reflected a congressional judgment that Bivens should still be available so that prisoners with legitimate claims in these areas could proceed. And so the Supreme Court in Crawford
L. What case are you referring to right now?
Crawford L. v. Britton, Your Honor.
Yes, okay.
And so the Supreme Court's conclusion, I think, is directly relevant here because the court said it is not up to us to second guess how Congress has decided to deal with these very concerns. That was Congress's legislative judgment, and we cannot disturb it. And of course, that is exactly what Abbasi says the court should do in this context as well. I'd also just note that claims like Mr. Reed's are nothing new. This is not going to open the floodgates to some species of litigation. He is merely asking the court to retain the status quo that has existed for decades. And so as the Third Circuit said in its Bistrian decision, where prison claims have been available for so long, there is simply no reason to believe that they are going to cause any undue disruption of executive functioning. And defendants have not pointed to any such evidence here.
As to the First Amendment, are you asking for preservation of the status quo?
Yes, Your Honor. This court has recognized First Amendment retaliation claims since its 1986 decision in Gibson. These claims have been available for many years. And in fact, when Congress legislated in the PLRA, these types of claims were available across the country. So Congress certainly would have had them in mind when it decided to retain Bivens and not.
Well, I don't know that Congress necessarily did. Let me ask you this. Has the Supreme Court ever recognized a First Amendment Bivens claim?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. I appreciate your candor. Thank you very much.
No, Your Honor.
Did you want to save some time for rebuttal, counsel?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
You're welcome. We'll hear from opposing counsel, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. And may it please the court, Life Overvolt with the Department of Justice. I'd like to just start by clarifying a distinction between the three categories of claims we have in this case. We have the First Amendment Bivens claims that the district court did address and concluded the Bivens remedy would not be extended to, which is consistent with this court's decision in Buenrostro and also the consensus of the courts of appeals following Abbasi. There are also the Eighth Amendment claims, which the district court dismissed largely on screening grounds, but which the parties have briefed the Bivens question, consistent with this court's screening order. And then we have the FTCA claims that the plaintiffs sought to bring below as well, which don't raise any questions regarding the extension of the Bivens remedy, of course, but were dismissed based on a failure to plead exhaustion. And I would like to start with the First Amendment claims. The district court did determine that you could not extend the Bivens remedy to these claims, and that is the correct determination based on the fact that they do arise in a new context, and a number of alternative processes exist for vindicating a claim in this area, as well as other special factors, including the PLRA and the particular features that First Amendment claims, the particular considerations that they create in the prison context. And just on the last point, the Bistrian case that the plaintiff cites as supporting the notion that you can extend the Bivens remedy to these claims without raising any concerns, in fact, rejected extending the remedy to First Amendment claims, noting some of the same problems with disruption that we've identified in our brief.
What if there were a First Amendment? I have two follow-up questions on that, counsel, if I might. Has any circuit extended the First Amendment Bivens to the First Amendment?
I am not aware of a decision.
Me either. Okay. So then my next question is, what if we had a situation where the retaliation, because it seems to me, let me just back up. It seems to me that if we just decide that all of the three instances are redressable only under the Eighth Amendment, then there is something lost in the First Amendment retaliation claim that perhaps is not vindicated. maybe, because of the retaliatory nature of the allegations. So I'm wondering about that. If you can think of a hypothetical where the retaliation is not physical punishment, but perhaps denial of, I don't know, family visits or access to the law library or something that doesn't involve physical punishment. In that situation, would it be appropriate to extend Bivens?
I don't think so, because the FTCA and any, you know, remaining Bivens claims that might be available are only one avenue for redress. The administrative remedy program does allow a prisoner to bring any grievance relating to the conditions of his confinement to the attention of BOP to be redressed. The Supreme Court certainly has not looked only for other avenues of redress that provide monetary compensation.
Right, counsel, but in this case, I'm sure you appreciate the difficulty is, you know, telling this person who filed an administrative grievance and then allegedly suffered three really serious consequences, physically abused three times, particularly because he did that. It strikes me as pretty anemic for us to say, oh, you know, file another administrative grievance in this case. I mean, he's got a strong argument that the administrative grievance process was literally unavailable to him, doesn't he?
I think the plaintiff here has not alleged that he, in fact, was deterred from filing grievances. We know that he did file a number of grievances in this case, and the grievance program itself has provisions for, to the extent a person reasonably believes that filing the grievance in his home institution will lead to threats to his safety or welfare. There are provisions for filing it with the regional director in the first instance. And of course, to the extent there is this pattern of conduct, we do have the injunctive relief. Other possible avenues for seeking redress in connection with a sustained pattern of action that violates the First Amendment, for example, which Abbasi tells us that sort of alone may be enough, just that avenue for injunctive relief.
It wouldn't be injunctive relief to talk about, you know, the medical program or the meals that are available or not available. This, what would the injunctive relief be? Quit violating the prisons. You know, BOP has rules about the degree of force to be used. And his allegations are that there were a few individual actors who were very maliciously disregarding those rules. So again, what would an injunction do here if there's no, we're trying to deter individual misconduct, that's what he's trying to do anyway.
The point I'm making is to the extent he's now arguing on appeal that there was some sort of sustained action that was making the administrative remedy program unavailable to him, there are injunctive avenues to address that sort of.
But what are they, counsel? It would be he's been assaulted three times allegedly. We don't know, but allegedly assaulted three times so there'd be nothing to an injunction that says don't do that again.
If there were a pattern of retaliation for using the administrative remedy program, for example, Lemaire itself is that's obviously in the Eighth Amendment context, but that's an action in which the defendants sought injunctive relief for what was found there to be a pattern of prison not following its own procedures. So to the extent there is this sustained pattern, which we don't have, which undermines the notion that the administrative remedy program is not available to him, but if there were that sustained pattern, then injunctive relief is another possible avenue. And the one other point I would make is that, again, the Supreme Court is clear that we have to take together all the constellation of safeguards and other alternative remedies. And they have not pointed to any other case from the Supreme Court where you have anywhere as robust a constellation, and that was not considered enough to give a court pause in extending the Bivens remedy.
Why would we not recognize the Eighth Amendment claim here?
So on the Eighth Amendment claims, they do present a new context from the medical claims that were recognized in Carlson. In Abbasi, again in Hernandez, the Supreme Court has clearly described the claim to which it extended a remedy in Carlson as medical claims. Here, the claims also arise under the Eighth Amendment, but they pose distinct concerns relating to the need to impose security in the institution, respond to safety threats, all concerns that are just absent in the medical context. And that's, again, Lemaire has recognized that in the claims relating to the application of restraints it faced. These are different concerns, and Abbasi tells us a modest extension is still an extension, and you just need to look for a meaningful difference. So the fact that the claims are not medical do in the connection with the excessive force claims arise under a different standard, the intentional and wanton infliction of pain standard. Those are meaningful differences such that it's a new context, and then you have to consider all the special factors and other alternative remedies that are available to the prisoner in this case.
What if these prison officials, this is hypothetical, had waterboarded Mr. Reed? Would that state a Bivens Eighth Amendment claim?
It would still present a new context for many of the remedies, any of the cases in which the Supreme Court has recognized a Bivens claim. That's obviously not what we have here, where there are allegations of force used, but where we have no sort of factual allegations on its connection to any sort of security measure. So I don't think that is this case at all. And obviously there would be any number of alternative avenues that would be pursued if that sort of thing happened in a BOP system.
Well, what are Reed's administrative alternatives? What are they?
So as to the Eighth Amendment, he is alleging actions that constitute a tort under state law. He has the FTCA, if in BOP officials were acting outside of the scope of their duties, he has the remedies under state tort law itself. He has the option through the administrative remedy program to raise issues for investigation, and to the extent serious misconduct is alleged, that, you know, administrative remedy program allows that to be brought to the attention of the institution and remediated that way. And of course, to the extent it is a pattern of misconduct, he has injunctive other habeas relief that the Supreme Court specifically noted in Abbasi as another alternative to that. I would like to touch just as another special factor which applies both to the First Amendment and the Eighth Amendment claims here. The PLRA, to the extent it did anything relevant here, it did not extend a damages remedy to BOP officials for constitutional violations. The notion that just because it did not expressly abrogate Carlson, we have to read into it an extension of Carlson to any number of contexts that the Supreme Court did not consider in that case, that's just inconsistent with the approach the Supreme Court has made clear we have to take to these cases. As the Supreme Court in Hernandez just recognized, with respect to a similar argument made regarding the Westfall Act's allowing not providing the FTCA's exclusive provision to apply to Bivens claims, that just leaves in place Bivens where it found it without granting any sort of authority to extend. So the PLRA, particularly in the context of sustained congressional action in the area of prison conditions and the remedies available to them, the remedies available to prisoners, is a factor counseling against extending the Bivens remedy to any new context, as again, the Supreme Court at least suggested was the case in Abbasi, even though it did not conclusively resolve that question. And then if I could, just on the FTCA claims, the plaintiff does not allege on appeal that the district court committed any error in concluding that he had failed to allege exhaustion, which is unfortunate. He notes on appeal that he could have alleged exhaustion, but that does sort of reflect the tough position that I think the district court was in here, that he did identify defects in the pleadings, explained in fairly extensive detail what was needed to address them, and the plaintiff declined and chose to stand on his complaint. So as to the screening aspects of the decision, the district court correctly allowed the plaintiff to elect to stand on his complaint. So it's not sort of noted on appeal any issues with the determination made as to the FTCA claims. notwithstanding.
Counsel, could I get you to, forgive me, could I get you to just repeat that last point because you froze for just 2 seconds? I might have missed a little bit. Go ahead.
Sure. Just that that reflects that there were aspects of the screening decision where the district court did identify a clear defect. There's no dispute that under the case law of this court, the plaintiff does have to allege exhaustion under the FTCA in a way that's not the case under the PLRA. And it was, you know, he was notified of that defect and did not correct it, notwithstanding his position on appeal that he would be able to if he did.
Thank you.
And if, just, I guess, to return on the Eighth Amendment claim, we have briefed at the court's invitation. We do think that a number of the considerations that the have led the courts to not extend the Bivens remedy as to First Amendment claims brought in the prison context do extend to the Eighth Amendment claims as well. It's difficult given the focus that the Supreme Court has put on the medical nature of the claims in Carlson to say that they don't arise in a new context here, and then whether the Bivens remedy should be extended is a question, a who decides question in which the answer is usually Congress. If the court has no further questions, we would ask that the district court be affirmed.
It appears not. Thanks so much for your argument. Counsel, any rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor, just a few points. First, if I could start with the First Amendment retaliation claims and how they interact with the PLRA. The government has pointed out that the PLRA and the Westfall Act were not intended to extend Bivens' release beyond where it existed at that time. But they have not denied that Bivens' claims, just like Mr. Reed's, were already widely available throughout the country, recognized by a majority of courts of appeals without dissent. And that conclusion was fully consistent with the broad reasoning of Carlson and the Supreme Court's 1992 McCarthy v. Madigan decision, which reaffirmed that Bivens was available and held that the administrative remedy program did not displace it. Now, this is important because the Supreme Court has stated on several occasions, including in the inclusive communities case we cite in our brief, that Congress is aware of broadly unanimous Court of Appeals precedent when it legislates. And that was certainly true here, where everyone agrees Congress was specifically focused on the types of prisoner Bivens claims that were available, including First Amendment claims. And that's why Congress, in fact, approved those claims. And as the Supreme Court again stated in its Crawford L decision, it addressed these exact same concerns, which, by the way, the court also said are overblown, because in the ordinary course, insubstantial First Amendment retaliation claims do not pose any special burden on courts and can be dismissed at the summary disposition stage. I'll just mention, as far as the Bistrian decision, although it did find there was no First Amendment retaliation claim there, that was in the court's view because he was attacking the prison policy, which is not allowed under Abbasi, and it specifically distinguished the incidents of specific physical abuse that were available under that post. Your Honor, as far as the Eighth Amendment and the new context inquiry, I think a crucial point there is that the government is relying on differences between this case and Carlson that were also present in Abbasi itself. Because in that case, it was also a prisoner abuse conditions of confinement case. And yet, when the court analyzed the new context inquiry as to the prison warden, it did not identify the fact that it was physical abuse and not medical treatment to make it a new context. And so certainly, if the court in Abbasi didn't identify it, that indicates that it's not a meaningful difference. And finally, Your Honor, I'd just like to emphasize how sweeping the government's position is here, because adopting their arguments would mean that in the future, guards can physically abuse prisoners knowing the prisoners will not be able to sue them for anything, and that no court will ever adjudicate the constitutionality of their claims. That is not the result that Congress intended, and this court should reaffirm that core First and Eighth Amendment prisoner Bivens claims remain available. Thank you.
Thank you both for your excellent arguments. You've helped us flesh out a really important area, and we appreciate it very much. and in particular, Mr. Kimfeld, we want to thank you for participating in the pro bono program. Appreciate all your efforts. Thank you both. We'll go ahead and take this case under advisement. And that concludes our arguments for today. So we'll stand in recess. Thank you.